Hi, I'm singer, saxophonist, and songwriter Curtis Stigers, and you're listening to Life Minute TV.
Award-winning singer, songwriter, saxophonist Curtis Stigers first stepped onto the scene in 1991 with his eponymous debut album that sold 1.5 million copies. Since, Stigers has gone on to tour the world, opening for the likes of Elton John, Prince, Eric Clapton, James Brown, Joe Cocker, Rod Stewart, and Bonnie Raitt, to name a few. His latest album, This Life, is a celebration of 3 decades of his professional music journey. The album reflects on his 13 albums, thousands of concert performances, and millions of miles on the road. We took a look back at his long and impressive career, which includes playing for presidents and princes. The talented Boise-born artist even serenaded us with his guitar.
So tell us about the album, This Life.
Well, This Life is a look back at 30 years in the record business, 30 years on the road, millions of miles and thousands of concerts. I wanted to show how much my songs and the arrangements of my songs have evolved, like I have. You know, I'm much older than I was 30 years ago. I'm exactly 30 years older than I was, if you want to do the math. I'm 56 now, and my songs are older, and they've grown, they've changed on the road. As we've played them, we've created new arrangements for them, my band and I. I used to play with a pop soul band, and now I play with a jazz quintet. So we do versions of my old songs that are entirely different. And I wanted to show that, as well as some of the other songs that I've recorded. I recorded What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding for the soundtrack to The Bodyguard, the movie The Bodyguard, back in the early 90s as well. And we now do a completely different version of that. And I wanted to show that. I also sang and co-wrote the theme song to The Sons of Anarchy, the TV show. And we do a very different version from the version that was recorded for the show, because that was a blues rock thing. And I tour with a jazz quintet. So we still have the edge and the darkness of that tune, but we've just added a little bit of, a little bit of spookiness to it.
What inspired you to do this album?
Well, when my 25th anniversary in the record business came up 5 years ago, I had this idea that I might want to do that, but I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to look back. I've never really been somebody who looks back at what he did before. I like moving forward. I like changing and learning new things. And at that time, I had an album out with a big band. And so it just didn't make sense to look back at that point. But as 30 years came up, in the headlights, I thought, well, this would be a good time. So I actually went into the studio in October of 2019, about 4 months before the world came to a screeching halt. And that was just an accident. I went in then because I knew I had a new album coming out, an album called Gentleman, and I didn't want to miss the chance. I had some time off that October, so I took my band into the studio in Brooklyn, New York, at Brooklyn Recording, and we made this album, looking back, playing the songs, the new versions of all of my old songs, and then pandemic. Bam, there's a plague. I couldn't leave my house for a year and a half. And so I couldn't have made this record. I was very lucky. I made an accidental genius move there by getting it made before everything came crashing down. So now that we seem to be somewhat coming out of this dark period, and I'm able to get back out on the road, I have this record to celebrate my 30 years. And in fact, I meant for it to come out in September, which would have been the exact 30-year anniversary of when the album came out in the United States. But because of COVID, I had to wait a little bit longer. But it's still the 30-year anniversary, darn it.
Tell us about the track, You're All That Matters to Me.
Well, You're All That Matters to Me was the second single from my first album. And it was a hit all over the world. My first song, I Wonder Why, was the big smash. That was top 10. You're All That Matters to Me, particularly in Great Britain, it gets played at weddings all the time. It's one of those songs. I originally we recorded it as though it was kind of a Phil Spector wall of sound. You know, I mean, probably the closest thing to it as far as from that world would have been a Righteous Brothers thing. That's what we were going for, that You've Lost That Love and Feeling vibe. Now I play it like a very intimate, quiet, personal jazz love song. You know, I mean, that's what it is. It's a big fat love song, but I do a very different version of it now. And I wanted to get that on tape for this record.
How did you begin kind of reimagining these, you know, classic song of yours?
Well, normally I will spend a lot of time thinking about arrangements, and then I'll get together with my co-producer or piano player, and we'll work out brand new arrangements of songs that we're doing for a record. For this album, I had these were ready. These were ready and done because we'd spent decades evolving them. I mean, we've worked on these songs, these new arrangements, at sound checks and on stage in front of audiences. We'll play, you know, we'll play What's So Funny About Peace, Love and Understanding by Nick Lowe. We've played it 3 or 4 different ways over the last 20 years. You know, it sounded entirely different 10 years ago than it does now. So when we went into the studio, we were ready. We didn't really have to think about these at all. They were there. They were tried and true arrangements that, you know, audience tested.
And you mentioned your songs being part of The Bodyguard and the, you know, opener for Sons of Anarchy. What has that been like to be part of a broader aspect of pop culture?
Well, I mean, The Bodyguard soundtrack was so huge, and it was such a surprise. I recorded a song by one of my heroes, Nick Lowe. He wrote the song. Elvis Costello sort of had the famous version of it, of What's So Funny About Peace, Love and Understanding. But then the movie came out and the album started selling. And because of Whitney Houston's 5 hit songs, massive hit songs, the album sold 45 million copies, which did a lot for my relationship with Nick Lowe. I had never met Nick Lowe previously. He was a hero of mine from when I was a kid even. And I got a call from him saying, "Thank you so much, Curtis." And he told me I'd never have to buy another meal in London as long as I lived. And so I'm friends with somebody that I grew up admiring and idolizing. So that was a big part of it. I made less money than he did. He made a lot of money because I was on the same label as the album was on. A lot of that money went toward the making of my next record. So the record companies always have a way of keeping your money. And they did, but that was fun. And then the Sons of Anarchy thing, that was just a really nice break. A friend of mine was the music supervisor, and he asked me to write the lyrics. Once I'd written the lyrics or co-written the lyrics, I sang a demo for it, and that demo became the recording. So I was the voice of Sons of Anarchy. It led me to or led a lot of new fans to me, which was nice. You know, I make pretty quieter jazz records. I mean, they still have loud points, but not nearly the rock thing that Sons of Anarchy thing was. So it brought a lot of people that wouldn't have found me otherwise. It's been a lot of fun. And I got to, we were nominated for an Emmy Award. That was cool. I got to go to the Emmys and ride in a limo with my friend Seth MacFarlane. It was cool. It was a nice time.
Speaking of Seth MacFarlane, you got to be in the Ted movies. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I met Seth MacFarlane in London, actually. Seth's a great singer. I mean, a lot of people don't know that. I mean, they think of him as a voice artist and a cartoonist and a, you know, I mean, he's Seth. He's a movie star. But Seth is a great singer, and we sang on a couple of big orchestral shows at Royal Albert Hall and became friends. We toured a little bit after that with that orchestra, and I was actually in Boston while he was shooting that first Ted movie to sing with him. We were recording the album of this concert that we had done in London, and he said, "Well, why don't you just stay an extra day, be in the movie?" I was like, "Okay, sure." So I pretended to play piano. I don't even play piano. That's the great thing. I play sax and I sing and I play some guitar. I'm not really a piano player, but in the first Ted movie, I'm the restaurant piano player. And just last week, my wife got a text from someone that said literally this: "Am I high or is Curtis in Ted? She wrote back and said, no, you're not high. Curtis is in Ted. And it's a slow pan past me. And then I'm not in the movie after that. The second movie he asked me to be in, and I get to sing at Ted's wedding, at the teddy bear's wedding at the very beginning. I'm actually the wedding singer. So I do actually make a real appearance where I make some noise, but it's a very funny thing to have people say, were you in Ted? You know, people that I've known for years, and they'll just watch this movie late, you know, much later than the movie was released years later. And they'll just, Were you in Ted? Yes, I was in Ted. And that is a funny movie. That is a really funny wrong. It's very wrong, and I love it very much.
How did you first get into music?
Well, I was a fan of the radio. You know, I before I moved to Idaho with my mom, we lived in LA until I was about fourth grade, and you drive around a lot in LA, you listen to the radio, and AM radio played everything. And so I really got into music. I loved radio, and I loved records. The first album I bought was Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. And I knew from a pretty early age that I wanted to play music. I just started picking up instruments. I first played the clarinet in the grade school band, because a choir director, actually, I auditioned for the Kiwanis Boys Choir, and Mrs. Holsinger said, you can't sing, you're not a good singer, you should be in the band, which I still love to tell, you know, it's like, you can't sing, kid. But it did lead me to being a musician, because, you know, it led me to playing instruments that I would not have played otherwise. So that was good. I played clarinet, then I started playing drums, and I just, by the time I was done with high school, I realized that was all I did, you know, so I went to college for jazz music. And soon after that, I moved to New York and sort of found my way and got a record deal. But it's just because I'm a fan. I love records. I love the radio. I love a good song. And that's just what I do. It's the thing that I do. It's the thing that I would do for free if I didn't get paid for it.
Who have been some of your biggest inspirations?
Well, certainly Elton John was a big early influence, because I memorized all of his records from the 70s. When I was a kid, I just knew every song. But I've been influenced by so many different types of music and so many artists. Ray Charles is a huge influence on me as a singer. I love Joni Mitchell. I love Elvis Costello. I love singer-songwriters, you know, new people like Jason Isbell and Hayes Carl, people that maybe aren't household names, but who are making incredible music. There are so many great singer-songwriters out there. And I could name a million. Ella Fitzgerald was really big in my jazz growth, and Sarah Vaughan, people like that, Joe Williams. I love blues singers. I love B.B. King. So anyway, I could go on and on about my influences. I just like music.
What was one of your favorite collaborations? Do you have a dream collaboration that you'd still love to do?
Well, I got to write a song with Carole. Well, I got to write several songs with Carole King, one of which was on my album Brighter Days many years ago. Carole is an old friend, and what an amazing writer. I was so lucky to work with her. So I've written with a lot of cool people. Barry Mann, who wrote You've Lost That Love and Feeling with his wife, Cynthia Weil. I got to sing. I duetted with Al Green. I duetted with Sean Colvin. These are people that I admire. I idolize. And that was amazing. I really love Diana Krall. I think she's a wonderful singer, piano player, really interesting artist. I think our voices would sound great together. So, I mean, to put, if you held a gun to my head, that would be the first one I'd say is I wouldn't mind singing with Diana Krall at all.
And who have been some of your favorite people to perform for, or who you were most excited performance?
Oh, to perform in front of? I played at Buckingham Palace recently, actually, just a couple of years ago. I got to play with the Ronnie Scott's big band for Prince Charles and the whole Prince's Trust. They were all there gathering for a week, and I was the special guest that night. I got to sing some songs, sing one of my songs and a couple Sinatra things. That was exciting. He was very, very nice. I was very impressed with how down to earth he was. He met every single member of the band. He shook the hand of every member of the big band. It was 20 guys asked them what instrument they played. It was very, he was cool. He was a lot hipper than I thought he'd be. He was like a really good cocktail host, you know, a good cocktail party host. He's like, hey, hello, welcome to my house. It was very cool. So that was pretty exciting. Van Morrison has been coming to my shows in London the last couple of times I played there. That's almost debilitating to have Van Morrison in the audience. It's almost like, you know, it's to have grown up listening to someone as much as I did, and then to have him in the audience, it's a little terrifying.
And do you have any shows coming up?
I am back out on the road. Yeah, the album comes out February 25th, and I'll be in London on stage in London at Ronnie Scott's Jazz Club that week. I come home for a couple of weeks, and then I go back to the UK. I'm on the road for about a month touring over there, and I'll be all over the world. You just check out curtisstigers.com and you'll see I'm a busy man. I like playing for people. That's how I define myself, is as a live performer. I like making records. I love being on stage. So I tend to be on the road all year long. You know, I come home a lot, but I'm kind of a full-time tourer.
And you mentioned some before, but are there any other current artists or music you listen to these days?
You would put me on the spot. Let's see. I'm trying to think of who else. I listen to people that maybe a lot of people, I don't tend to listen to pop radio that much. So I hear stuff that other people don't. There's a wonderful artist who I actually know, who's really getting a lot of press and noise about her these days. Her name is Elin Jewell, really great singer-songwriter. It's like if you took Billie Holiday and Loretta Lynn, you know, the country singer, put them together. It's like jazz, country jazz. I think she's great. She's one I would bring up. But you put me on the spot. I can't think of anybody else.
And now that you've been in the business for 30 years, what's one of your most proudest accomplishments? What are you most proud of?
Well, the thing that has been most important to me has been the music. I mean, I've done a lot of cool things. I've played in front of, you know, 88,000 people at Wembley Stadium. I played at Shea Stadium with Elton John and Eric Clapton. I've met my heroes. I've been on all the TV shows, Letterman and The Tonight Show and all that stuff. But the thing that I'm most proud of is just that I play the music that I love. I had to dismantle my pop career in order to make music that really I was the boss of. You know, I'm a bit of a control freak. So I pride myself in being somebody that makes music for myself. And then hopefully other people, there are enough other people that like it, that I can pay the mortgage and put my daughter through college. So I had to forego being a zillionaire, or at least the possibility of it, so that I could make the music that I love. And, I'm happy with that. I love my career and I love how my life is going.
And what's next for you? Is there something you still want to accomplish that you haven't yet?
Oh, I keep looking for new things. You know, I have this every Wednesday. I have my live stream show, Songs from My Kitchen. And that has led me to think maybe I want to make a record, like an acoustic record, the way that I do my shows in my kitchen with my guitar and my dogs. You know, just a record with me and my dogs might be the thing. And I want to take that on the road with a screen behind me. I've got a whole plan for that. I'd also love to make a record with an orchestra. I've played a lot with orchestras over the years, but I've never gotten to make a recording. It costs a lot of money, so I'm going to need some. If anyone out there wants to financially back me to record with some amazing big orchestra, I'd be happy to talk to you.
You can crowdsource too.
Yeah, whatever it takes. So that there, but I'm always looking for something new, and I'm always confusing publicists. Who is this guy? Who is this? Why does he do so many different things? Well, it keeps me interested. It's who I am. I'm versatility has always been my blessing and sometimes my curse.
And what do you like to do when you're not working?
I am an avid cyclist. I spend a lot of time on my mountain bike here in Idaho. I'm a road cyclist as well. And then in the winter, I ski. I love to cross-country ski and downhill ski. I've been doing that since I was a kid. Those are the things that I spend a lot of time at. I also, I spend a lot of time here at home raising funds for Interfaith Sanctuary Homeless Shelter. It's a low barrier shelter that my wife now happens to be the executive director of. We started raising funds for them 15 years ago, and we've raised over $2 million for them. And I'm very serious about that, and very proud of the work that we get to do. I'm grateful that I get the chance to help take care of people who need some help.
Awesome. And since we're Life Minute TV, what's a piece of life advice that you live by or something, just your best piece of advice?
Follow your heart. Don't let anybody tell you that your dream is wrong. Give it a shot. You know, you can always try something else, but that's what I learned is, you know, sometimes you have to follow your own path. And as long as you're being a good person, taking care of other people when they need help, you know, you can do your own thing. Follow your heart. This is my song, I Wonder Why. It comes from my new album, This Life. Love is a hunger, it burns in my soul, but you never noticed the pain. And love is an anchor, it won't let me go. I reach out to hold you, but you push me away. Then you always convince me to stay. And I wonder why we hold on with tears in our eyes. I wonder why we have to break down to make things all right. And I wonder why I can't seem to tell you goodbye. Yes, I wonder why. Now, I'm no angel with my selfish pride, but I love you more every day. Love is an anger that builds up inside as the tears of frustration roll down my face. Why does love always have to turn out this way? And I wonder why we hold on, tears in our eyes. And I wonder why we have to break down to make things all right. And I wonder why I can't seem to tell you goodbye. Yes, I wonder why. I don't want to fight again tonight about the little things, please, baby. I just want to find my way back to love. Oh, and I'll meet you there, baby. And I wonder why we have to break down to make things all right. And I wonder why I can't seem to tell you goodbye. Yeah, yes, I wonder why. Yeah, baby, I wonder why. Love, love is a hunger.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.